Hey, this is Wade. Today I want to go over the earnings call for Sprint and T-Mobile. I'm just going to make it quick. What I wanted to do was just review how that would affect the field, like the work in the field, because they reveal a lot in these earnings calls. It's about financials and for their plans. They lay out the plans. If any of you listen, I got the links in my blog. So wadeforwireless.com and wadesarver.com/podcast. Okay. So in the T-Mobile call, for one, when you listen to T-Mobile's call, Legere is very interesting. You know, he keeps it light, keeps it moving. He's a funny guy. The whole team is, you know, very lighthearted. It's actually a fun call to listen to. So if you get the time, you should at least listen to a little bit of it. The guy's sort of funny. But anyway, what I gather from their call, they're doing their LTE build out, mostly in urban areas, and they're doing it slow and progressively. And the people I talk to that do the deployments for them, they've simplified it. You know, it's LTE. It's not as complicated as, say, the old UMTS was. Their old systems were very complicated to put together, as was Sprint's. But they're going to continue with business as usual. And from what they're saying, it's going to be a constant and steady deployment. So I would say if you have T-Mobile work now, you'll have T-Mobile work in the future. I mean, it seems to be working. I don't know a lot of guys doing it. I just know a few. But the ones doing it say it's good, steady work. I'm glad to hear that. They're going to make voice over Wi-Fi a priority, which is really cool for all you guys that work on the core and work on the networking. That's going to be a big deal. They're still going to push it, but I think they realize at home it works great, but out in the field it's not working so good. The other thing, for all you guys that do a lot of this work, I think they're positioning themselves to align with, say, the cable carriers, because Legere's honest, you know, he's pretty open about that. He wants to partner with the cable companies. They all have these massive Wi-Fi networks, and I think what he wants to do, especially, like, I live in a Comcast area. Comcast has a ton of hotspots around. Now, they're mostly in Philadelphia, but then what they've done, you know, they have the Xfinity hotspot at everybody's house if you have a wireless cable modem. It's basically anywhere that you have a Comcast wireless cable modem, you can get one Xfinity. They put it in almost everything. I think you can disable it, but why? You know, it's free. And to be honest with you, I have a wireless router inside my network, so that's where my firewall is. So for me, I think it worked out pretty good. Anyway, continue with the rollout. They're going to do voice over Wi-Fi, which is really cool, which is really going to promote the Wi-Fi growth to continue. Wi-Fi still deploys, whether you guys know it or not. I don't know how many people that listen to this would actually deploy Wi-Fi, but it's steady work. I mean, a lot of people still install Wi-Fi. A lot of people put it out there. And there's a lot of talks of Muni Wi-Fi coming back, you know, the municipal Wi-Fi for the cities and towns. I don't know if you remember, Earthlink had that big push. They did Philadelphia, but they couldn't support it because their whole plan was based around advertising. And yeah, I'll be honest with you, they had no idea how much it would cost to deploy anything in the city. It cost a lot of money. Ask any utility, ask any city that deployed their own system. It cost a lot of money. Public safety, they spend a lot of money to deploy those systems. That's why this FirstNet system, they have $7 billion, and obviously it's not enough, but I know I'm getting off track here. So with T-Mobile, lighthearted call, those guys are fun to listen to, but when you listen to what they're saying, they're going to continue with the steady growth that they have. I don't think they're going to go by gangbusters, and I think I never know what T-Mobile's going to do because they were up for sale, they weren't for sale, or they were trying to sell themselves, they were trying to merge with somebody. I still think that's their game plan, is to grow through a merger or to be bought. You know, it's almost like they're buying time to get bought. So the other thing, maybe they're just using their money wisely and just upgrading the dense urban areas to LTE because they are winning in markets. You know, they're right up there with Verizon. They're number three now. They passed Sprint as far as number of subscribers and so on. Their system seems to be working very well. So whatever changes they're doing, it's good. But it's slow and steady growth. They don't seem in any hurry to get there. Now, Sprint's earnings call. Having trouble saying that. So in Sprint's earnings call, they talk about their plan too. And that was a good call, actually. Not as lighthearted, a little stiff. I could almost feel the tension on the call. It's the way I felt. You know, I don't listen to a lot of these, so what do I know? But Claret got on there and he gave a speech about what they're going to do and how they did. And the one good thing for Sprint, even though the numbers are down, their churn is lower than ever, which is amazing because it's Sprint. And I think they, you know, with Network Vision, they had a lot of problems. And I'll get into that in a minute. But anyway, I think in the U.S., now that SoftBank is a major investor, I think SoftBank is trying to figure out what they're going to do next. Well, I don't think they're trying to figure out. Let me rephrase that. Sun was on the call too. He's the chairman of the board and the CEO, and the SoftBank put him there to basically, I guess, help straighten out Sprint. And I'm going to throw in my two cents. The way I heard him, he wants to build a better network. And he basically said all the networks in the U.S. stink. They could be so much better. And, he's probably right. And I think one of the things that Sprint specifically has had a problem with is with network vision. I'm going to tell you my opinion. When Sprint did network vision, it's a very complicated build. Sprint made that whole system way, 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 way more complicated than it had to be. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys worked on that, but it was, you had plumbing diagrams for the tower top. You had CDMA, you had LTE. And at the time, when Sprint started that, they had four technologies, if you think about it. They had iDEN, which they were shutting down. They kept that out of it, but they wanted to use that 800 megahertz. That was a big deal. They had CDMA and they had LTE, which those two they were putting together. And they also had WiMAX. Clearwire was still up. They were still going strong. So that was another thing. Clear Channel's the other thing. Anyway, they still had Clearwire going, which was WiMAX. And they wanted to pull more of that spectrum in. So they were trying to combine, as far as frequencies go, 1900, 800, and then they had 2.5 gig they wanted to put in there in some markets. And it was just such a complicated build. 800 megahertz and 1900 megahertz together. They had all those jumpers up top. They had CDMA and LTE. In my opinion, it would have been much easier to do an LTE overlay and just pick a band and roll with it for LTE. But they didn't do that. They made it very, very, very complicated. Now, a lot of you guys probably think, well, complicated's no big deal. When you're out at the tower site and all of a sudden now you're running HyperFlex up the tower, you're introducing a lot of new things to the crews. You're introducing fiber, which they've rarely worked with before, and you're running power up there. You're hanging the remote radio heads up there, and now a lot of wiring is done up on the tower. You're running fiber jumpers. You're running RF jumpers, and it's a mess. You're going to have your boxes up there now. You have to put a breakout box, basically, a box to put all of the cabling in. So it was very complicated. Oh, you had multiple boxes too. I think you did. I'm trying to remember how they did it because I know you had the splices for the fiber up there, and then you also had the power breakout up there to power the radio heads once it got out of the HyperFlex. It was very complicated. Any of you guys that worked on it, you probably know what I'm talking about. It's like the old T-Mobile build. You guys probably did some of those very complicated, much more complicated than it had to be. That's my opinion. So now I think when they do densification, I think that was Mr. Son's plan, is to create a system that is simple, the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. And I think that's his plan here. I think what he wants to do is build a system that is very straightforward, very simple, and easy to execute. And I think that's why SoftBank wants to stick with their vendors they used over in Japan. Now, they had a huge advantage. They're in about the same par with Sprint. In Japan, the government issued out that 3.5 gig to a lot of carriers for free. It was a lot of bandwidth for free, which is wonderful. Here they paid billions for that recent auction. Now, Sprint didn't participate. They have a ton of 2.5 gig spectrum. So they have to use that, or I would use that. Why not? You got it. You might as well use it. And they're also doing carrier aggregation, which helps them bring everything together. I know I'm spending a lot of time on Sprint here, but from the comments they made on the call, that's going to be a huge deployment, but it's not going to be just macro. I think they're going to do macro. Obviously, I would imagine they'd want to deploy all the 2.5 gig into macro as well. Plus, they want to convert to LTE. I think they want a solid LTE system. So I would imagine on the macro level, LTE everywhere. But what I gathered from that call, they want to improve the urban areas and improve them quick with densification, meaning mini macro and small cells out there. And I don't know how many small cells they want. I think what they really want is a mini macro. They want to get the biggest bang for their buck. And that's what I gathered with that call. They also want to do a lot of carrier aggregation, and they want to get it as efficient as possible in LTE. I think that's the plan. So I would like to think for Sprint, we'll have a ton of work in 2016, 2017, and 2018. They want to do it in 2 years. It's very aggressive. I hope they can. But I think what they'll probably do is in 2 years, probably get the major cities done based on the call. And you know, I'm speculating a lot here. I have the link in there to the earnings call. Everyone's welcome to listen. Just go ahead, sign in, and listen. Each one for T-Mobile and for Sprint is about an hour long. But I want to go over the history of Sprint because it's important to understand where they came from. You got to remember they had Nextel. And Nextel, when they let Nextel go and they shut it down, they lost a lot of people. People were just angry because everyone liked that. Every contractor, every service person liked that push-to-talk. The push-to-talk served a niche because I used it all the time. Everyone used it. If you've done tower work, chances are you had a Nextel phone. I mean, you really relied on that push-to-talk. It was a great tool. When that went away, it went away. I know the other companies like Verizon had push-to-talk. Had a long delay. The phones were fragile. It just wasn't that great. Now, with that said, smartphone, that took over everything, right? So let's look at the lessons learned here. T-Mobile, I think, learned a lesson earlier. Keep it simple. They have a simple game plan. They're moving forward with LTE. And the thing about T-Mobile is, you know, they're a marketing powerhouse. Legere is always marketing himself. I know he comes out and you see him attack the other carriers, but that's all marketing. The guy's smart that way. He brings a lot of attention to his company. Kudos to him. I think with Sprint is trying a lot of plans where they want to do the same thing. They want to market. I know they constantly defend themselves against, say, T-Mobile, but I think they're coming out with a lot of plans that they think will be attractive to people. And they got David Beckham doing their new commercial. That doesn't hurt either. I don't know if any of you guys are David Beckham fans, but I think he's an awesome soccer player. You know, just an amazing guy, and he draws a big crowd. I don't know here in the States if he's still that popular. I'm sure he is. Anyways, I'm getting off track. I guess what I'm saying is Sprint and T-Mobile are very powerful marketing units, and they're going to use that. But for you in the field, most of the people that listen to this, I think what we're going to see is a lot of work. I think what Sprint's going to do when they finally settle on a plan and they have it ready to go, and I think that's what SoftBank's helping them do. Organize with a simple, straightforward plan and then execute. At least that's what I think. We'll see what really happens, you know. The other thing I wanted to bring up was that Dan Hesse, I have a link in there for him too in Fierce Wireless where he came out and he talked about all the problems he had with the network vision cutover, all the outages he had, how many customers they lost. You know, now he says he regrets it. But I have to tell you, I don't blame Hesse. You know, the technical people made that decision to proceed that way. My opinion is they probably looked at it and said how cool it is. They can do all this stuff. But the reality is they didn't look at the deployment side and look how complicated it was and look how the cutovers would affect everything and how the extra time and effort in the cutover when they could have done an overlay. And an overlay would have been nice and clean. You know, they could have just turned up the new and turned down the old. They could have tested the new without hurting the old. But the way they did everything, and I think at the time they thought, well, we can reuse assets and we can save time and money. And I think they meant well, but they didn't really think it through. With that said, they took in a lot of advice that told them a lot of different ways to do it, and they had to make a decision. So they made a decision. You know, it was a nightmare. It just didn't work well. So that's the way I see it. But he talks about, you know, all the subs he lost and shutting down iDEN and everything they did. And it wasn't Hesse's fault they bought Nextel. Nextel, you know, Nextel was very complicated in the structure that they had set up. And I don't know how many of you guys care, but there was Nextel and Nextel Partners. And the whole idea was the Nextel company had the major cities. The Nextel Partners had like the tier three cities, the lower level cities. Like a Nextel had like LA, New York, Chicago, Texas, and maybe the next level down like St. Louis, you know, cities like that, Richmond. But then Nextel Partners had cities like Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, York, Pennsylvania, let's say Corona, California. You know, they had the slightly smaller cities, and they all were tied together. But it was technically two companies. So I think when Sprint made the offer for Nextel, they didn't do their due diligence, and they thought they had everything, but they didn't get Nextel Partners. Then they had to go through a negotiation with Nextel Partners. Then they had to absorb a system that was nothing like anything they had. It was an iDEN system. Motorola system was very unique. And then Motorola was going to sunset the system if they didn't upgrade. I think with Sprint, they were just trying to figure out what to do with it, because now they had to maintain another system, another technology, added a lot of complications. So I think they just decided to shut it down. And besides, when Sprint took it over, I think a lot of people were just leaving Nextel by then. Maybe it was on its way out. I don't know. And at the time, I do remember this, Sprint's customer service and Nextel's customer service at that time was really going downhill. They were just getting to be a nightmare to deal with. I had a Sprint phone at one time. That's the main reason I left. I had so many problems on the billing side. It wasn't worth it. That's why I left. Went to Verizon because of the reliability at that time. You know, we're talking 10 years ago, maybe 8 to 10 years ago. All right, everyone. Be smart, be safe, pay attention. I just wanted to go through this, see if you guys were interested. See ya.